Hey, everybody, welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast, the Sunday night slash Monday morning version, depending on where you happen to be living in this country. I am Scott Janstead, joined as always by Jeff Erickson on Sunday nights. If you could please rate and review the podcast, we always appreciate that. It goes a long way towards helping people find the podcast. Does a lot for us there, so we would appreciate that. Jeff, we are 10 days into the season. I feel like everybody's treating this a little bit like a short season, but it's, you know, this is the, like last week was Easter and there was a lot going on last week, and this week was the Masters, but I felt like I really got into baseball this week a lot, and you know, I find like no hoes on my team. I was making some good fab bids this week, but feels like we're finally in season now that we're a week and a half in.
Yeah, and you know, you look at our upcoming schedule, and I know this is on our outline, but I was thinking about it too. No 5-game weeks,
thank goodness.
You know, thank goodness. No Sundays.
Today was weird. No A's game on a Sunday during the baseball season. Like, the season starts, I'm excited, and then I have a Sunday afternoon. I'm like, oh, there's no A's game on. This sucks.
Well, especially because the A's are finally starting to play a little bit,
actually,
too. You want another
a couple
game.
Runs.
Put me in, coach. It's like Keston Hiura over there.
It's really funny you say that, because we talked about three teams last week, like, who had the worst start. Since then, the Red Sox haven't lost a game. They are the only team in the AL East with a winning record. The Braves got going. They won four games this week, and the A's this weekend finally got going. They beat they won three out of four against the Dodgers and Astros this last four games. So it's funny how we talked about, oh my god, these teams look horrible the first weekend, and what do we know? It was a short sample, but I tell you what, Red Sox are scoring some runs.
Yeah, they are. They really are. It all starts with J.D. Martinez. He is just locked in. Yeah. I mean, he misses a day to illness. Everyone's freaking out because they see him getting put on the COVID IL, but that's the new policy. You can do that for you can do it for a day. And
it's funny. It seems like a lot of these guys are like, if they get the vaccine, they don't feel well. They're doing that for a day, and they just can stick them on there for a day, bring up somebody else from the alternate site, and then kind of go back. So it's, the COVID IL doesn't quite mean the same as it did last year, which is a really good thing, too.
Yeah, although it's making it hard to kind of do the guesswork on roster management.
Yeah.
I know we're going to talk about Toronto later on, and I know with between Teoscar and Lourdes, I don't know what to do with those guys this upcoming week. And,
you know, I agree.
Do I utilize my own IL spot in my leagues? And if I do, like in labor, you know, we have IL spots as opposed to NFBC. That's a difficult call, because then you're locked out for the whole week.
Yeah.
Do you really want to do that?
And we don't really have a great story on Teoscar. It sounds like Lourdes Gurriel is a vaccine kind of not feeling well side effect kind of thing. So it definitely adds just another wrinkle in our management and trying to figure out lineups each week. And you know, I don't know if we need more wrinkles, but we certainly have them.
Yeah, and it's already difficult enough trying to time the market with injuries, time the market with injured guys. How many people had Trent Grisham on their bench this weekend? Oof. That was fun.
Yeah,
you know, it's that. But you know what? Hey. I'm complaining about a baseball thing for the most part.
Yeah, exactly. Right? No, it's great to have it back. I have an online championship team where all seven bench guys going today who had the little red cross next to them. But, you know, we got baseball season. We have a full baseball season. I am not going to complain about that. I'll complain about that on the side about my team. But happy to
you
be back.
You secretly replace Scott Jenstad with Justin Mason. Let's find out if anyone notices.
Seriously, right? Sorry, Justin. But no, it's great to be back here. Good to be talking with you. Good to be talking about real games. So I'm looking forward to that, obviously. We're going into, I guess I'm going to call it week three. We were talking about off air. No teams with five games. Oh, there's 18 teams that play seven games this week. Means a lot of two-start pitchers, too. Like, we didn't have a lot of two-start pitchers the first couple weeks. We were like, had that half week. Then you had a lot of teams with five games this week. So this feels like the first like real baseball week coming up.
It does. But also that means rainouts too, which is kind of fun too. We had to deal with that this weekend.
Yeah.
I mean, and suspended games.
Don't even get me started on Marcus Stroman, because I'm still not pleased about that one.
Oh, you know, everybody. Well, and you know, the manager comes out and says, it appears, you can see how it appears. It seems like we might have messed up. Yeah, it seems like. Yeah.
Of course. You think you just blew your
butt a little bit more. Blame a meteorologist, an unnamed meteorologist or weather specialist.
You blew your number two starter in a game where he threw the two batters. Like, it's crazy. And then it'll be interesting when he starts this week. It's actually a really interesting week for the Mets, because if they keep him regular, he goes at Coors next weekend.
I know.
But
you've got no starts from him.
Yeah.
And now your first starts at Coors.
Yeah.
Oh.
And then you get but if they throw him early, like, oh, maybe there's count this like as a side day, then he gets an earlier start this week and you want to use him. So it's I'm hoping we get some sort of report from them on what they're going to do with him. I didn't really see one after the game, but hoping we get something, because it really depends. There's a couple leagues where I'll use him whether or not we know that decision is made.
Yeah, and you know his home, and if he does get one of those first 3 days, it's a home start against the Phillies. It's not great.
No,
it's a home start, which you're never going to turn down. But still, it's not great. Like, I have David Peterson in a couple of leagues, and you know, that obviously he's affected by this too a little bit.
Yeah.
If he's pitching one game against the Phillies who knocked him around the first time, and then the second one's at Coors,
yeah,
I'm not using him.
Although I don't know, the Coors Rockies right now are not something I'm too scared of. But you know, anytime you throw a guy in Coors Field, you do hold your breath a little bit. But sure. That lineup is not quite the same, and you know, April Coors is not the same as July and August Coors, but still not ideal to have your guy going in there.
Yeah, did you already see that Trevor Story leads the league in expected home runs, but not home doesn't have any? That's a fun one there. But that's two things that work there. There's the ball.
Yep.
There's also three things. I mean, believe it or not, the size of the park, Coors sometimes actually is better for batting average than it is for homers.
Yep.
But three, also the Rockies did some changes to their fences, especially right center and left center. I think it's called the Birdish barrier or something like that. They're trying to help the pitchers by changing the fences a little bit there, because that's going to help. But in the interim, they've screwed Story a little bit there.
Great. Just what I want to hear when I have Story in my main event in the first round. But hopefully, yeah. I think he'll get it going. As long as he stays healthy, I'm not too worried about that one. But we do have a couple of designated hitter worries this week. The A's mm-hmm. start their week in Arizona. The Indians end their week in Cincinnati. So Mitch Moreland, the first half of the week, is probably not going to play very much. And then Franmil Reyes is obviously a big part of people's team, is probably not going to play very much on the back end. So those are a couple of guys. If you have them, you got to figure out how to fill those guys in.
Well, at least with the NFBC, you know, like, you can do Monday through Thursday,
exactly.
And you're all right. But,
for sure.
The other thing, too, is, like, I just want to kind of look at, like, Cleveland. I mean, you look at their outfield, and it might be worth it, especially in Cincinnati, which has a relatively small outfield, that maybe you just play them out there? At least one or two games?
You would think they don't want to sit him for all those games, but, I mean, it's I guess you sit if you sit Josh Naylor. Yeah, you probably have to, because none of those other guys can play center field. So then, yeah.
Can everyday Eddie play at the play center at all?
Oh boy, I don't think so.
Yeah, probably not.
But you're right. Since he's a smaller outfield, but yeah, you can't. I mean, if you're the Indians, you gotta get Franmil in there for at least one of those games. But it's still in the NFBC. You probably got to sit him for that period. I mean, it's a utility spot, so you can use anybody in that spot. I imagine that I'm pulling him out there, and definitely Mitch Moreland this week. They have a couple of lefties anyway, so he probably wasn't going to play a couple of those games. Then they play three, and the third game is in Detroit. It's against a lefty, so Moreland's pretty much a wash for the first half of the week.
Oh, I'd agree. Yeah. And the one righty game in the first half of the week might be against Zach Gallen, which I know is on our list of things to talk about. But
yeah, that was kind of an out of nowhere one.
Yeah, I know, with all the doom and gloom, and we'll see.
You brought it up. Let's talk about it now. It sounds like he may actually pitch on Tuesday for the Diamondbacks. We didn't expect. I don't think anybody expected him quite back this quickly. And then out of nowhere, they're like, oh, he might return to start against the A's on Tuesday, which, you know, of course he lands against the A's. But I don't know. I probably want to see that before I believe it. But they're still listing it as TBA. But Lavolo definitely said it could be Zach Gallen. And stay tuned, I saw was the tweet.
Yeah, well, think about it this way. There's no minor league.
Yep.
So there's no minor league rehab starts.
That's
there. And you know, I think they shut down there was going to be a consortium like team, the West Coast teams playing in Arizona. They shut that down due to COVID concerns. I know some of the teams with their alternate training campsite team players are traveling with the team. Like I know KC's traveled to play into Louisville to play Cincinnati's alternate training campsite team.
Makes sense.
And I think they did the same up in Columbus for Cleveland. So for what that's worth, that, you know, the rule is, though, that you have to track with the team. So if Kansas City's in KC, then they have to stay at their home site. But if they're on the road, well, they go on the road. They can go on the road too and scrim it. Basically, they concoct these games.
Right.
It's kind of, I mean, it's impossible to track everything this way, but it's better than what they had last year. Is the general gist of things.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they must be fairly close, because like when JD Martinez went in the COVID deal, they called up Michael Chavis just for a day. So it's not like they must be just ready and kind of, you know, at the alternate site and waiting, because Chavis came up for a day and they went back down. So it's an interesting little season we got going on here.
Yeah. But so I expect with Gallen to bring that all back. The thing is, Arizona doesn't have that option as far as I know. Correct me if I'm wrong about that, listenership. But, you know, you might as well just have them do his rehab in a big league game.
If you're gonna, like I was gonna say, he's gonna throw three innings, you might as well just have him do it there and call it a day. And then they go, a piggybacking kind of guy,
right?
You know, starter for the second part of that game, and you just kind of go Caleb Smith or someone like that, and you kind of call it a day.
Yeah, and you know, just say, hey, if you feel any stress at all, let us know.
Yeah.
You know, treat it like a minor league rehab start.
Yep.
Yeah, it's Arizona. I mean, frankly, this weekend notwithstanding, where they took out 2 out of 3 from the surging Cincinnati Reds, our Reds. That, you know, I they're not going anywhere this year. So they might as well use that to go ahead and do that, and that would be a good way to attack that.
For sure. So Fab this week I found pretty wild. It seems like I didn't think there was a lot of big names, but there was a lot of money spent. And it wasn't necessarily, you know, guys that went for $200-$300, but there was a lot of guys that went like 60, 70, 80 and kind of, you know, maybe fringy kind of guys, people that I didn't think were really worth that much Fab. But I guess everybody has money. Everybody's excited to play. Everybody, you know, is coming off the short season. We're all spending money like crazy. But it seems like the Fab money was flying. And I will start at the top. Emmanuel Clase was available in some online leagues. He was taken all in the main event. But if you play in a local league, your home league, Clase might still be out there. I think he was pretty clearly the highest guy. We each had an online championship where he was available. I think you told me he went for something like $425 in yours. He went for about $325 in mine. Based on usage, based on the way he looks, he clearly seems like the guy in Cleveland right now.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, just the stuff.
Yeah.
The stuff is so impressive.
It is.
I think, you know, it's all these guys that have the jobs and all that. Like, I'm going to throw myself under the bus. I got Cesar Valdez in a couple leagues last week. I mean, he's a junk baller. He's the opposite of Clase.
And he's 36 or whatever he is too.
Yeah. So the point though is though at the same time, Cleveland has better guys to compete with him too.
Yeah.
Karinchak, Whitgren. They're quality relievers.
They are. It just seems like usage-wise that they're clearly kind of moving towards him at the end of the games. And when they have a lead, it seems like Wickens threw the seventh today, and then Karinchak came in, and then Clase came in, and they saved the game for Logan Allen, which I was appreciative of. But, you know, he's thrown 3 innings. He got 5 strikeouts, no hits, no walks so far. In 2019, he didn't pitch in 2020 in the majors. 2019, Clase had a 2.31 ERA, a 22% K rate, so not really high, but it seems like the stuff is definitely playing up in the strikeout market right now for him.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, just got to make sure that he maintains control. I think walks are the kryptonite a little bit there. And you never – I don't really know what sort of suspension he had. I forget. I think it was – was it – you know, what do you remember if it was for drugs of abuse or drugs of enhancement?
I do not remember, but I'll look it up as you're talking.
Okay. So, you know, that's always a risk factor there too.
He was suspended for the PED – Baldenone.
Okay.
So performance
that actually is worse for me. Because that means how much of that, you know, he's got that one big strike against him already.
Right. That's interesting. Yeah, he missed the whole 2020 season for that. But let's jump into some guys who were a little more available. Yeah, Yimi Garcia was available in a lot of leagues. Not as many 15-teamers, but a lot of 12-teamers. He got the first save post Anthony Bass getting pulled out of that role. Don Mattingly had an interview this afternoon after their game where he kind of left it open ended and just started. Seemed like he was just naming pitchers that are in the bullpen for the Marlins. He even got to Ross Detweiler in the list. That's how far he went down the list. But he pretty much said, we have 5 or 6 guys that could do the job, but it seems like right now Garcia is probably the choice, but I think it's pretty committee-like and still pretty open, but he was really good last year. 15 innings, an ERA under 1, a 31.7% K rate, a walk rate under 9%. This is a pretty quality reliever last year with his first year with the Marlins. Then in LA, he was in LA in 2019. It was pretty good then, too. The K rate wasn't quite as high, but an ERA under 4 in 62 innings. This seems like a guy who actually might be pretty good.
Yeah, he might be. And the thing is, there is a danger that we get Jordan Romano'd here.
Yeah.
Everyone thinks it's obvious. He even got a save. But keep in mind, Mattingly named 3 guys at spring training, too. And, you know, Dylan Florio is one of those. Last year, we kind of didn't make a big announcement of it. And then one guy won the job and Kinsler and he ran with it. But, you know, I think he's kind of purposely keeping it standing. He seems like one of those managers is like, oh, it does me no good to tell you in advance sort
exactly.
of guys. There's a strategic advantage to all this. It might be, but it's still super annoying.
Yeah, it was just funny that he literally was – you could just tell he was like trying to think of names in the bullpen as he went through there. And it was he made some effect like if the match was different, it would have been Blyer, and then he mentioned another name. So I think Garcia is probably the bulkish kind of guy for those days, but I don't think we're looking at a guy that's getting every opportunity by any means.
Yeah, that's right. You're right. He wasn't available in either of my mains. He was available in, I think, only – oh, I got him in one of my onlines last week. So,
Would you drop Anthony Bass in a 15-teamer after this start to the season?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I mean, if you need the drop.
Yeah.
I mean, he's probably not my first choice just because things can change back pretty quickly. But, man, in a 15-teamer, I mean, it's hard to keep a stash like that.
It is.
I mean,
and we all kind of have a couple of those closers waiting as it is. Like, I find myself with more relievers this year than I want on my roster. But, guys, I'm like, I can't quite drop this guy. I want to hold on and see what happens for a week or two. So roster spots are definitely at a premium right now. So that's a good
point. Yeah, they absolutely are.
Yeah.
They absolutely are. And that's the tricky part, too. And we're going to be – I just have a feeling we're going to be attacking these closers a lot.
Every single week. I think it's going to be very clear they're going to be a lot. There's going to be a kind of a closer of the week kind of every week, I think, is what we're going to get, at least for the first couple months of the season.
Yeah, I think so, too. And that kind of tempered my enthusiasm for everyone short of Clase. I mean, I was bidding on Nimi Garcia. Don't get me wrong. I was bidding on Lou Trevino. I was kind of bidding on Corey Knebel, but – Not aggressively, like not over $100. Not over 10%.
Let's talk Trevino, because it's funny. You and I talked, I don't remember what it was, but three or four weeks ago, we were talking about the A's close situation with, I think it was before they signed Rosenthal. And I was like, I think the Lou Trevino is a good, like, draft champions kind of guy. If you're in round 38 and you need someone that's going to be on the roster, maybe falling into some saves, he's the guy. But I was a little surprised by how aggressive everybody was on Lou Trevino this week. I get that the way they used people kind of lined up well for him. Bob Melvin pretty much said, if we get to the ninth inning and it's not a lefty matchup kind of thing where I'm going to use Diekman, it's going to be Trevino. So, like, he kind of got people there. But, I mean, he went for over $190 in both my main events. And this is a guy that hasn't gotten a save yet. He was they didn't really say who they were going to use. They were up 6-3 on Saturday, and they scored in the top of the ninth. And Melvin said, I was trying to stay away from Trevino and Yusmeiro Petit this game, but if we hadn't scored the extra run, I wasn't sure what I was going to do yet. They scored the extra run, and they brought J.B. Wendelken in. So
I thought they scored that in the eighth, though.
Oh, they scored the eighth. So either way, they scored the extra run. He decided to kind of take that decision out of his hand and use Wendelken instead.
Yeah, I have Wendelken in AL Tower, so I was kind of hoping he might be the guy, too, because at one point he was in the picture. But,
right.
Yeah, it does look like Trevino. He went for, like, 187 and 219 in my two mains, though.
There were aggressive bids on a guy who has not got a save yet. We don't have an indication he's definitely the guy. I guess we're just at that time of the year where everybody has money and everybody – we probably – in a 15-team main event, there's probably, 12 teams that think they need saves right now. There are very few teams that are very comfortable with a couple of closers. So I guess right. It's kind of just what you get.
Yeah. And I want to look at real quick, because there's a lot of people that are desperate for saves right now.
Oh,
there's
no
some
doubt.
People I've seen tweets out there, people who don't have any saves in 15-team leagues. And then TGFBI, it's true. In the main event, okay, there are 645 teams. There are a lot of teams with zero saves. I'm just kind of scrolling through this here, and it's a lot more than I expected. I need to figure out how to count that out, but it's looks like almost 100.
I was gonna say, I'm just looking at my league's indication. There's four teams out of 30 that don't have any saves. So about
a little
more than 10% right there. So. You mentioned TGFBI. I don't have a closer in that league. I realized as I was making bids today, I started 9 starters last week.
Yeah.
I drafted.
At least you didn't have any surprises.
That's
at
true.
At least you're like, oh, okay, that's fine.
I drafted Trevor Rosenthal and Kirby Yates in the top 10. So it's that's kind of where you end up.
Yeah. Yeah, that happens. But at least you went in this week. Like, I might as well make it up in wins. And did
for
you
sure.
get the wins in Ks?
Probably not.
Yeah.
At least I went for it, though.
You always are self-effacing, though. I don't know. Let's see. One main, there's only one person with no saves. How about the other one here? I'm very curious now. I'm a good podcaster, but very curious. Three and one are the two teams, two league, the league counts for lack of saves. But there's a lot of one saves out there. Point is, if you are at zero or one or two saves right now, you think it's the end of the world. You think you're way behind. But you're not as far behind as you think you are.
Yeah, like one good week and you're kind of middle of the pack already. It's just like, yeah. This is all you need. To answer your questions, I got three wins and 54 strikeouts using 9 starters. The problem was I had three starters, two starters that left games hurt early. I had Morejon and Chris Archer and Corey Kluber pitched 2 1/3. So while I threw a lot of starters, they weren't necessarily good. And Michael Wacha didn't make his second start. So it didn't quite work out as planned, but I certainly
He should have had a win today, though.
I know.
They blew that win for him.
I was like, I was going to get
it, but he would have gotten it anyhow.
I was like, I'm going to get a sneaky piggyback win. It just didn't happen. But yeah, my TGFBI team, I have three guys in the top 10 or four guys in the top 10 who I have not. Three are out for the year and one hasn't played yet, or two haven't played yet. So that's five of the top 10. So it's I'm kind of fighting a tough uphill battle that I don't know if I'll be able to recover from that one.
By the way, three wins in a given week, it's not that bad either.
Yeah, that's true too.
Six wins in one of my leagues is tied for second place.
Yeah, you know, so wins are going to be.
That's assuming you're getting like a lot of opening day starters in that first half week, also. So
as if wins aren't frustrating enough normally, the fact that they're so big this year and going to be so much more frustrating. It's those blown saves when you have the starter are really maddening right now.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely, they are going to be. Honestly, I'm there for it though in a little bit because there's a way to kind of. That gives you hope that you can come back. All this weird variance is going to be fine.
Like an 8-win week will be absolutely massive at some point in the year. Like that, and you get those some points, and that's going to be like you're going to jump from like 12th place to 5th place. It's going to be wild.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
You mentioned Corey Knebel. Looked really good. Got the save for the Dodgers. I believe it was on Friday night. But then after the game, Dave Roberts pretty much said, I didn't use Kenley Jansen because it would have been 3 out of 4. So he kind of put out the fire there that maybe Jansen was going to be sharing the job or out of his job. Jansen came in today against the Nationals and looked really good.
Looked like spring training all over again.
Like that game against the A's, he looked like he couldn't throw 90 and could not throw anything near a strike. I think he threw 22 pitches, threw 9 strikes in that game. He looked done. Came in today, I think he threw 8 pitches, had 2 strikeouts, and just blew away the Nats. So it's, I don't know, maybe he just needed a couple days or what it was, but he definitely tempered the Corey Knebel bids in a lot of leagues, but there were still
not in all of them, though.
Yeah, there were still some strong bids, but I think we saw, if Jansen doesn't get that saved, I think we had some big Knebel bids, and there were still some decent ones, but it definitely got tempered a bit.
It's almost as if pitchers can vary from outing to outing.
Yeah,
Especially an older pitcher, maybe that the back-to-backs might be a problem for him, though.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Teams are more in tune with that. So, a Knebel bid is still maybe an Able bid.
Yeah.
You'll be able to get that. So but I saw him go for 167 in one league and like 29 in my other main.
Yeah.
I mean.
And the thing with Knebel is he's on the best team in baseball.
Yep.
And he has been a really good closer in the past. He had 39 saves for the Brewers in 2017, had an ERA under 2. Walked too many guys. I think that's his big issue is he walks too many guys, but struck out a ton of guys. He had a 40% strikeout rate that year. Like he was an elite guy in 2017. He was really highly drafted in 2018. It didn't work out well, but the velo's back up. The velo right now is 96.5 where it was kind of in those good years. And he's a guy that, if he got the job, would be a top 10 guy pretty quickly.
Yeah, I listened to Jim Bowden on SiriusXM Fantasy on Friday, and he was comparing him to like the Dodgers getting Blake Treinen last year and how they kind of resuscitated him.
Yep.
Pitchers, they have variants. Yeah. Relief pitchers, I'm saying, especially. I mean, and sometimes you can't fix them. Sometimes you can. I'm starting to see like some teams are better at that than others too. And hey, go figure. The Dodgers are one of those that are better at that.
Yeah, smart with a lot of money is a tough combo to overcome right now for a lot of teams. Yeah.
And development. I think that's the other thing. And that's one thing I love about the Reds is I think that they're cutting edge in terms of technology when it comes to pitching. I'm not sure about the hitting side of the coin, but yeah, it didn't all work out this weekend in Arizona. But the amount of times that they've done good things with that in the last 5 years, it's really encouraging. And that's something they have to – and for them, it's a necessity. They can't win the Trevor Bauer bidding wars.
Right.
They have to – find the next Trevor Bauer. They have to find Dan Straley and turn that into Luis Castillo.
Yeah, and as an A's fan, they've been really good at that for a lot of years. But I'm afraid that a lot of teams are catching up, and a lot of teams are smarter than they used to be. And it's tougher for them than it used to be to find those gems. And they used to always find them year after year. And it's getting harder as a lot of teams are getting smarter.
Yeah, well, you have to develop them now. I think that's the big thing.
Which they haven't really been great at. They've sneakily been not very good at developing, especially hitters. They've developed very, very few hitters since the early 2000s. Right. Yeah, there's like very, very few. It's kind of wild. I mean, Chapman and Olson right now are but between that and the Tejada Chavez years, there was like nobody they developed internally.
Yeah. You could argue that they played a role in Donaldson's development.
Yeah, that's true. And it was kind of a weird, later on development. So, yeah, you could probably get some credit there. But
maybe not as good at drafting.
Yes.
You might be able to say.
Yeah, because they did trade for Donaldson. But, like, guys, offensive players they drafted and developed were very far, few and far between for a while.
Yeah. They're better off trading than they are drafting and developing.
Unless they're trading Josh Donaldson away, that doesn't work out quite as well.
Potato, potato.
The Diamondbacks are, you mentioned that when they talk about the Reds this weekend. A closer situation there is wide open. Apparently, Kisdavensky is on the restricted list. He's, like, walked away from the team, some personal stuff. Obviously, Joaquin Soria is hurt. So we've got Ginkle, we got Stefan Crichton, we have Yoan Lopez, who's striking some guys out, but also walking a bunch of guys. I added Ginkle last week, and I just kind of held him to kind of – I want to see what happens when they actually get a save opportunity because I haven't – you know, I haven't really had a good situation for that. They had one on Monday, I think, and Ginkle was not feeling well, so he didn't come in the game.
Yeah, that was the Tuesday night 13-inning game that we were sweating on Twitter.
Yeah.
And
it's like, where's Ginkle?
God, okay, it's Stavinsky. Oh, it's Yotla. No, I guess it's Lopez.
Yeah.
Oh, it's this Peacock guy? What the heck? It turns out he had a non-COVID illness when he was under the weather. Is what they said, and was unavailable. And then they haven't had a safe situation since.
So I'd probably go Ginkle right now if I had to pick someone there, and like Yoan Lopez kind of on the watch list if he can, you know, maybe walk a few fewer guys. But I don't know. There's nobody I'm really aggressive on or really targeting at this point. I'm just kind of holding Ginkle for now and see what happens with the next op.
Me too. I cut Crichton in a couple of leagues. I'm not even convinced, though, that that's the right call. I mean, yeah. They didn't. They had an extra inning game on Friday against the Reds, for instance. Ginkle didn't pitch. In fact, he hasn't pitched since one inning on Thursday against the Rockies, and they were losing badly in that one.
Yeah, I was like, oh, great, that's a good time for him to come in.
Yeah, Lopez has pitched. I think it might be Lopez. I didn't go after him, though. I just didn't find myself going aggressively. But Lopez pitched on Saturday. That was a game they were winning, at least. I don't know. I mean, it's just so hard to tell with them.
Yeah, and I saw four walks in four innings, and it was hard to get too fired up about him. But
right,
I mean, he strikes guys out, though. Like, if you're going to take a stab in a really deep league, maybe he's the guy. But I don't know. I'm probably just going to see how it plays out, and if I get a bid on someone, I'll try to. But I'm not really fired up about anybody in that bullpen at the moment.
Dark horse could be Anthony Swarzak.
Oh, back from the dead.
Yeah, when we were looking at, oh, he's a closer for like Seattle, for Atlanta, for the Mets, I don't know. Yeah. There was times for all of those teams, but he did pitch on Friday in the close game against the Reds. So, you know, that might be a possibility too. That's just the thing. I mean, it's just been devoid of save opportunities. We really don't know.
So on the offensive end for Fab, it wasn't quite as bountiful as the pitching side. There was a lot of closers to pick up, but Cole Calhoun in 12-teamers was someone I looked at a little bit. He's back from the IL. 49 home runs over the last 2 years. Batting average is an issue, but if you need power, he's likely leading off. He's a guy that's playing every day. And it's funny, Jeff, you and I talked this afternoon, and I in the main event, I need an outfielder. I had Kevin Kiermaier go on the IL. Outfield is insanely thin right now. There's nobody on waivers that I wanted. Every other position, I could kind of squint and see that working out. I could add this in the middle, if you add this in the corner.
Right.
Even catchers, I'm like, I could add Luis Torrens or Jose Trevino and kind of be okay with that. I couldn't find an outfielder I wanted to pick up, and that's pretty rare. I don't remember a year where this early on, I literally could not find an outfielder that I wanted to put on my team.
Did you try to like take a stab at Tim LoCastro anywhere?
Was like, he was
still stolen base play.
He was taken. I went with Christian Pache, kind of with the same thought that he's good on defense, playing every day, maybe steal some bases. Had some good base stealing in the minors, but I mean, he's striking out a ton. That's early though. I mean, he didn't have a huge strikeout numbers in the minors, so I took a shot there. I was looking at Marwin Gonzalez, who already has two stolen bases and eligible kind of everywhere and playing every day for the Red Sox. But you shake your head like that's kind of the barrel that I was looking at. It's
a known quantity. Yeah, and that's the thing is it possible Marwin Gonzalez has a year out of the blue and hits 20 homers? And it's possible. Sure. And maybe not. You could go 10 homers and 10 stolen bases. You'd probably be happy. Especially with multiple positions. I'm sure that would come in awfully handy. But he doesn't play every day.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, I was bidding on Franchi Cordero on one league. I got outbid. We went up to 49. He went for 77. We ended up with Nomar Mazara. He's kind of sort of playing every day.
But like, probably the world's most boring baseball player, though.
Yeah, I was just going to cue the, the gift of Larry David gift.
Three years ago, that would have fired me up. I would have been excited about Nomar Mazara a few years ago, but it's just...
I may have blown a lot of my fab budget at rookie
I remember
year,
that year, yes.
Yep.
Yeah, Mazzara was actually taken in this league too. Like, I couldn't find anybody. It was very meager. I even had some Willie Calhoun bids in there because he's supposed to be coming back at the end of the week, and I'll kind of piece it together for the front half of the week. But it was, I tell you what, I'm gonna keep track of that. If I see any outfielders with a pulse, I'm gonna go ahead and grab some for some depth, because I don't think we're gonna have. It's gonna be easy to find outfielders all year.
Tyler Naquin went for 318 in one of my mains with a backup bid of 251. So it wasn't like there's just one outlier guy doing it. It's like, I mean, and I get it. He had his best week ever. You know, he had five homers,
but
and
that's the thing, like,
bombs in those too.
The best week ever happened. So you're obviously the Reds guy. I asked you about this afternoon what you thought about his playing time. Where, I mean, obviously they have, with Jesse Winker back, they have three outfielders. There's no DH. They have a first baseman. How do you think Naquin fits in playing time at the moment? Like, we're talking like three times a week, four times a week. Like,
I think it might be four to five now, but I mean, it's been handy for them that Winker was. I don't know why Winker didn't start today. Unless he had some sort of setback with that calf cramp. But supposedly he cramped up on Friday night after starting off 3-for-3 on Friday night. I'm like, oh, he'll be available for pinch hit. Probably start Sunday. Didn't start Sunday. The Reds almost got perfect gamed by Luke Weaver.
Yeah, that's not impressive. You say four to five times a week, but that means that Senzel or Winker's got to sit a couple times a week then too,
yeah.
Right? Like, someone has. It's nice to put them all in, but somebody's got to sit.
I know. Talk about a team that could desperately use a DH.
You guys could really use the DH.
Yeah. Meanwhile, and Joey Votto is like, I think he's top 10 in hard hit balls, but is like got six singles on the year or something like that.
Can any of those guys play first base? I mean, you can play first base if you need to, but those guys really can play first base, right?
As far as I know. Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, I don't think so. I don't think any of them have played first base.
I mean,
Castellanos is an outfielder that is a DH that's playing the outfield too. I mean,
but you're not, I mean, guy rakes. You're not taking him out of the lineup, hopefully.
Of course not. Yeah. And you don't want to mess around with him either. He's the veteran. He stays. Yeah. I get it. And he should. I mean, if he's going well, the Reds are going well.
Senzel is, you know, your young stud. He can play center field. You don't want to take him out. And then Winker's really good when he plays. Like, it's a good problem to have. And at some point, it'll work itself out. Someone will get hurt, something like that. But I just couldn't find a path. I thought Naquin was going to be a little too frustrating. If you go for a big bid on him, and he didn't go for huge in mine. He went for like in the 70s and the 50s. But even then, at that price, it's why you want to play. And I think you're going to get a lot of situations where it's like Monday or Tuesday, he's not in the lineup. You're like, I can't use him now. And it's just, I think it'll be frustrating. And I think that you missed his best week of the season already.
That's the vibe I got. Yeah. So I had very tempered bids on him. I mean, I think where we're going to find bats are going to be minor leaguers that get called up later on this year. Because we haven't had a minor league season for a year and a half, you know, there's a whole crop of guys that we've heard of, but we also aren't like, oh yeah, I can't wait for him to get called up. And all of a sudden in June, they're raking and you're like, oh.
Yeah. And it feels like there's a lot of teams that could slide an outfielder in to a starting spot pretty easily, a young stud prospect. There's a lot of teams that are starting some pretty weak corner outfielders.
Yeah. Which also means, though, there's some serious Fabapalooza happening
there
here,
could
too,
be,
possibilities.
Yes.
And that, I don't say that as in a good way, as in terms of the bust potential of Fabapalooza. As the winner of Nicky Lopez can attest, I stay calm, Jeff. Stay calm. You can do this.
You also won Austin Riley, hit like 14 home runs the first 2 weeks, and then never again.
I was screaming victory from the rooftops for a month, and then like, oh my God, he's never going to get another hit again.
My favorite stat on Naquin is not the 24% barrel rate, it's the 76.2% hard hit rate, which really jumps out. It just, you shake your head, and obviously the smallest of samples, but that's a bonkers number.
So let me ask you this. I don't know if you've been seeing like the discussion on hard hit rate, exit velocity, and all that with the spongier ball.
Yep.
Should we have a different standard for hard hit rate?
We probably should. And as I've looked, you look at like a 38%, you're like, oh, that's not really that good anymore. And I don't know if we fully know all the data, but it sounds like the exit velocity is harder. There was some data that the drag made the exit velocity harder, but the ball didn't travel as far. And now people are saying maybe the ball's traveling further. I don't think we totally know, but I think you're right. I think it's pretty clear that in all those studies you've seen, the exit velocity is up a little bit across the board.
Yeah. But
76% still plays though.
Yeah. And if you do it relative to everybody else, that's when it really plays.
Yeah. So we got Fernando Tatis, obviously, had the shoulder issue. I forget when that was, but earlier in this week, so we haven't talked about it yet. But it went from like he's fine to it's an elbow to oh my god his shoulder came out to he has a torn labrum to he's gonna be out for the year to it's not gonna be long term now he might come back next week. Like it's run the full gamut of everybody on Twitter freaking out they lost their first round pick, now he's back this week. Hassan Kim hit his first home run this weekend, and you look at his numbers in Korea, I mean the guy was a monster. 30 home runs, 23 stolen bases in 2020, 19 home runs, 33 stolen bases in 2019. Whenever we talk about labrums and shoulders, I always bring myself up because I had the same injury. I had the same surgery. Obviously, I'm not comparing myself to Tatis in any way, but I know how it feels and some of the recovery. He's younger than me and 5,000 times the athlete. So I do get that, has better training staff, all that. But this is something that if he comes back too quick and he plays shortstop, like if he has to dive for a ball up the middle, he's very much at risk for doing this again. So I'm really curious if he's actually come back this week because I think they're taking a pretty big risk of it being not fully stabilized yet. You know, you could do rehab, you can strengthen everything around it and kind of stabilize it, make it better. You're never going to fully fix the tear until you have surgery. But I really worry if he comes back a week or two too soon and plays shortstop that you're looking at a big problem here.
Here's another thing about Tatis, too, is if he's sliding head first at all, you know,
for sure,
it takes away from your stolen bases a lot.
And you're a shortstop. You're grabbing the ball and you're tagging guys. You're pulling, you're extending your. It's like the third time I did it, I literally caught a ball to my left. You can't see on the video, but I caught a ball to my left and tagged somebody and it came out for the third time. That was a year after doing it the second time. So I'd like done exercise
and spring training. Yep. The first time it happened, he was going for a ball and in the hole with his reaching out. Second time with the at bat, a swing and a miss,
and that's how he
swings. That's how he swing and miss again,
and that's how he swings too. I mean, his swing is huge. He's not like he's taking a week to change his swing. It's just I love Tatis. He's great for baseball. I just really worry that this is not something you can just come back from and alter his game a little bit because he plays shortstop and he plays hard. I don't know how you alter that and don't do those things. Like you're not going to not dive for a ground ball, right? Like I just don't think you can get that out of your head.
Right. And by the way, Scott, I already know the only player you're ever going to compare yourself to is Jeff McNeil. So I know you weren't comparing yourself to Tatis.
I was definitely not comparing myself to Tatis. I just know that how the injury works and the surgery that goes along with it and all that kind of stuff. But it's what like Mondesi had it a couple years ago, the same kind of thing. Like you just worry head first slide, like you said, anything to do with a guy and with someone like Tatis. You paid up for him in drafts because of the stolen bases. And it's just you wonder if is it worth me risking trying to steal second base because A, I don't want to slide head first, and B, I'm not really used to stealing bases and sliding feet first. Like, am I going to tweak an ankle? Like, it's just you wonder if he even bothers stealing bases at that point. And I don't know.
Right. And then you compare him. And this is not an insult, but then you start comparing him to Xander Bogaerts or Corey Seager.
Who are
two awesome, good hitters.
Phenomenal players, yeah.
But don't run.
Yep. Yeah, if Corey Seager stole 30 bases a year, he wouldn't be drafted where he is. He'd be drafted where Tatis is. So it's the same kind of thing. But I hope it works because I, probably not a guy that I enjoy watching more right now in baseball than Tatis. And I have him on one of my online championships. So I hope he comes back. I hope it all works. But I can't fathom they're going to try and rush him at all anyway. It just makes no sense to do that.
Yeah. And it sucks that he wasn't there in Texas for this weekend, given what happened last year there. So that would have been fun. I mean, Padres had their own fun this weekend in Texas instead.
Yes, they did. That was a lot of fun. The Joe Musgrove no-hitter was a good time. First in franchise history is pretty wild considering how many years they've been in San Diego.
Yeah. The last team to have one, too.
Did you go after Kim in any leagues? Was that someone that you obviously the playing time is an issue. If Tatis comes back, they've got a lot of guys that can play a lot of different roles, and his playing time hadn't been super consistent before Tatis got hurt. How aggressive were you on him with the thought that, you know, maybe Tatis doesn't come back this quickly, maybe he gets hurt again, and he's an interesting piece if he's playing every day?
Yeah, we bid on him. Chuler, I did, in one of our two our main events.
How much did he go for in Maine? He wasn't available in mine. I'm curious.
45, second place 37, and we were a token bid because I don't know how long this lasts.
Yeah,
and that's the thing. I this was one of those weeks where I was like, unless Class A was available, I wasn't spending more than 10% of my budget anywhere.
And the thing that's funny with Kim is like that 45 could be the best bid of the season, or it could be
a home run,
or you may drop him on Sunday. Like it's that big of a variance right there.
Right. And isn't it true every week little bit there true. That you it's see true. Some of these best bids are the middle tier bids and a young player and it sticks.
So another hitter I want to talk to you about, Colin Moran in Pittsburgh. Obviously this offense is terrible. They did score a couple runs over the weekend though. For the first time, they had a couple good games against Zach Davies. And today was against Trevor Williams of the Cubs. Yeah. He hits third. But you look at his hard hit rates, and I won't even take this year. This year is off the charts. He's like 56%. But last year in 2020, he had 10 home runs and 200 plate appearances. He had a 47% hard hit rate, a 13.5% barrel. You compare that against other players, those are both really good numbers. This is a guy that just hits the ball hard right now. He was like a platoon guy for a few years and was like, oh, maybe he's going to hit for power against righties. And yeah. Now he's just a guy that just hits the ball really hard. I picked him up in my main event, and I probably sit him against if they're facing a couple lefties, but I think he's a guy you can throw in for half weeks against righties or in a good park or good matchups. And I think he's gonna help.
Yeah, and like you said, it's not just hard in the outfield to find at bats. It's hard everywhere to find good at bats, and you're finding a guy that's batting cleanup regularly for his team. I mean, yeah, I can get behind that. He wasn't available in my mains.
Yeah, he was. I think he must have been dropped because he was someone that I was looking to draft. So I wonder if he got dropped. I have to go look at that. But he was available in one of mine. I grabbed him and I kind of swapped him out for Mitch Moreland with the thought that Moreland's not going to play a lot this week and kind of, rotate those and see what happens. But, hitting cleanup, looking good, has a couple of home runs already. I think Moran's kind of a sneaky guy that helps you in the deeper league.
Yeah, 5 of 7 games against righties this week.
Yep.
Darvish is one of them, and Musgrove's another one of them. That's not great.
Could be a tough week.
And then Snell and Brett Anderson are the two lefties. Freddie Peralta's also on that schedule this week, too. Not a great week, actually.
But you look at some of the teams in that division, like the Reds are, 4 or 5 righties. The Cubs have 5 righties. I think you're going to find a lot of spots to use him and play. Milwaukee has 4 righties and Brett Anderson, so I'll call that 4 righties and a nothing. And then
he was good today.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, what do you have? One strikeout?
Okay. Good. But he got staked to a 7-0 lead.
He did pitch well. I will give him that. And you look at the Cardinals. They have 5 righties. Like there's 2 lefties in the division they have to face. I mean, every time they're playing division, that's what did I say? 18 out of 20 righties right there. And that's a pretty big number. He's going to be in good matchups. Some of those are tough. You mentioned some tough pitchers, but for the most part, there's not a lot of pitchers in the Central that scare me, and they're very right-handed.
Yeah, in fact, the Reds haven't faced a left-handed starter yet.
That's pretty interesting.
They face their first one on Friday in Logan Allen. That KH Kim should be back the following week. But I think the Cubs are, you look at the Cubs rotation, all righties.
All righties.
The Pirates rotation, I think, is it's one lefty, Tyler Anderson. And the Brewers, one lefty, Brett Anderson.
Yeah, that's it.
If you're an Anderson, you're lefty. Otherwise,
And you talk about the Cubs. It's funny. We're always talking about the Cubs as a good team. Outside of Kyle Hendricks, the rest of those righties, you're not really worried about benching anybody against any of those guys.
No, not at all. Well, this team pitch to contact. It's a very weird rotation.
It is.
High velocity and swing and miss is the trend in baseball these days, and the Cubs are doing their own thing.
They're really complete opposite, aren't they? That's wild when you look at those starters. They don't have a swing and miss really guy. Maybe Alzolay might be the one, but he's not even a super hard thrower either, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, they're kind of riding BABIP there a little bit there in defense. And Islanders goes, and Zach Davies, that was hurtful. I actually kind of was like a Zach Davies quasi-believer.
Especially against Pittsburgh, you're like, if I'm going to use him, it's going to be this week. And in one of my main events, I threw Arrieta for both the Pittsburgh starts, and I'm out now. But I drafted him for that reason. He got 2 wins, and I'm going to go ahead and punt that and get out of there now.
Wise choice.
Last thing I want to ask you about, Steven Matz is another good start this week. He's now thrown 6 1/3 and 6 innings, 1 earned run in each start. He has 13 strikeouts and 4 walks across his first 12 1/3 innings. This is someone that was horrible last year. 2020 was a debacle, but he was pretty good. He was, we'll call him decent in 2018, 2019, ERA around 4, 3.97 and 4.2. Strikeout rate was actually up last year. He just gave up a ton of home runs, a ton of hard contact. He got hit really hard last year. Home run fly ball rate was insane. That was 38%. Like, that'll never happen again. And it's a weird year. Like, his ground ball rate's been 47% or higher in all his years, and last year was 32%. So I don't know what happened last year, but he was a completely different pitcher. I watched both of his starts. He's throwing harder. He's getting the ground balls again. He seems like he might be back to that 2019 guy. I'm very wary when it comes to Steven Matz because he's burned me multiple times in the past. But so far, so good. I think he's available. If he's available in your league, even a 12 team, I think he's worth a bid right now.
He's been in my, every league I'm in almost. I'm like, I've been looking to pick up a starter or two this week, and he's one of them that, okay, we'll throw him in my list of bids. He might not be my first choice, but I'm like, He's in the yes column, at least. And do I bid on him or not?
Yeah, and he's at KC this week, and the Royals are struggling badly on offense. Whit Merrifield's hitting well, and then you look at the rest of that lineup, and they're like, Soler's at 130, Santana's at 160. There's a couple other guys. Everybody's in the 100s. It's a really rough middle of the lineup right now for them.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, the following week it's at Boston. That's not great, but no. So don't use him that week.
Yeah. He's an ALS pitcher. You're going to get matchups where you don't want to use him for sure.
Yeah, and I think there's going to be some moving parts still in that Blue Jays rotation where he may not even end up with that start. We'll see, but because they're getting Robbie Ray back on Monday.
Yep.
They're taking Tanner Roark out. More importantly,
I feel like they got bitter today.
Yeah,
I feel like they got the rain out on purpose.
The stack against him and DFS, and at least in the background is the day before, you know, the Saturday night game. It's like, oh, I can't wait to go against Jose Quintana. Oh, it doesn't look like it's going to rain. I mean, it doesn't look like they're going to get it off. No, 2 hours and 45 minutes later, they started and they pound Quintana into oblivion.
They had 14 runs in the fourth inning.
Oh, it's like, I could have been there. Instead, I went Reds.
I feel like somewhere Kevin Costner turned on the sprinklers last night and they made sure the Tanner Roark game was rained out because that just seemed too convenient.
Yeah, it really did, but it was brutal. But yeah, and TJ Zoik made one outing. He looks like he's going to start Friday, but maybe not. It looks like Pearson's like a month away still, but they've got some moving parts.
They definitely do. I think that Matz is pretty solidly like the third guy right now, which is, you know, I think that if he struggles a little bit, I think he's close. He's not close enough to that 4 or 5 spot yet to have to worry about that.
Yeah, I'm not worried about him getting taken out of the rotation more in so much more. They're like guys getting moved, like starts getting changed and things like
that's
that.
That's definitely possible too. So let's jump into some news and notes. There were a lot of injuries over the weekend. It's like I said earlier, I had one of the teams that had 7 guys, the Red Crosses. Let's start with the big name players. We had a couple of guys that were injured this week. Christian Yelich is considered day to day due to some lower back tightness. Usually that wouldn't worry me, except Yelich had back issues. And every time you get back issues, those things linger. I really want to see him back in the lineup because this one worries me until it doesn't. I guess is probably the best way to put it.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. And if his back's bugging him, is he going to be able to hit for power? Is he going to be able to run?
Yeah, the running's the key part for me.
Yeah. Well, both are kind of key.
Yeah. I
need him to hit for power too.
I do, but I don't even think of like attempt stolen bases if he's got some back issues, and that's just
right.
There's a reason that it's kind of like Yatis. There's a reason that that Yelich is that far up there because you're hoping for some stolen bases out of that pick.
Yeah, you are. And he actually has that. Has 2 stolen bases coming into today. He's hitting .320.
Does he have a homer yet? Does he have a homer yet?
Does not have a homer yet.
What's his K rate?
It's like 37%. So
because we bet on K rate and batting average. So I'm winning the batting average easily, but the K rate you're winning easily.
Yes. I think it was like we split it in the middle somewhere, like 26 or something.
Yeah, they could be something like that.
I think actually.
Oh wow, did I go that low? No. What was I doing?
No, it might be 26. I forget which, but you gave me the better K percentage, and I think I gave you the better batting average.
I think that's what it was. I think we pretty much guaranteed we're going to split it the way we did it. But Anthony Rendon sat Saturday, was going to sit today. They got rained out. Sounds like he's likely out on Monday with a sore groin. This is obviously a tough one. You know, a guy you took in the third or fourth round, and they're playing Monday and Tuesday and off Wednesday. They play Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. They're off Thursday. If he doesn't play Monday, it's tough to use him for at least the first half of this week.
Yeah, and they already said he's unlikely to play Monday. Yeah. So, I mean, and if, with a busier schedule, too, there's a lot more opportunity cost if he misses out. Chances are you're going to have someone that's got 3 games.
Mm-hmm.
And if you start him and he, remember, we've never had this whipsaw with Anthony Rendon before.
Never.
Yeah. At least there's no Coors Field series for him to sit out this time.
Oh, I do remember that. That was brutal.
Oh, yeah. And then, But yeah, he hit his first homer on Saturday, but then he hurt himself on a throw subsequently in that game.
Yep.
He was the one in that 14-1, if I recall correctly.
Oh, that's right. So he came out after it came out in part of that game. I got you. That's right.
He's like, my work is done here.
Yeah.
But
Josh Donaldson on the plus side had 6 at bats in a sim game on Sunday. Did hit a home run. Sounds like he had no issues. This is gonna be one of those ones like every time he runs to first or runs to second, you're gonna be like, hold your breath. But it sounds like he might get back in the lineup pretty early on this week.
7 games for them against Boston to start off with. 4 against Boston in Minnesota. You'd like that, and then at the Angels that. Well, and if he makes it all the way through, you get rewarded with a Quintana game on Sunday. So that's pretty handy. The question is, did he get thrown out when he ran the bases after that simulated homer? Was there a simulated ejection as well?
There should have been, right? I don't even know. I think if he's in the lineup, you just use him until he gets hurt. I think it's the only way to treat Donaldson right now is you want those at-bats. If he's in there, use him because we don't know how long we're going to get him for.
Right.
Mookie Betts missed the series, weekend series, so the Dodgers were without Betts and Bellinger this week. Bellinger went on the IL on Friday, which is kind of weird. Like, I watched that play against the A's, and it looked like he got spiked, and he has a bruised calf, but I guess the Dodgers can be as safe and cautious as they want to be. They're going to win games anyway, but Betts is hopeful for Tuesday. They don't play Monday, so you're going to have to make a decision with a lot of guys that do play Monday. But if he does play, he gets three against Colorado. You're going to want those starts. They are home, but you're still going to want those starts against Senzatella, Gray, and Austin Gomber. He's a tough one. I guess you have to hope that you have another guy that doesn't play Monday that you can put in Tuesday, but I don't think you can afford to sit him. You're probably going to risk this one.
Yeah, I mean, it's your first-round pick. That's kind of the line. But again, so frustrating because it's – you know, they're not going anywhere. It's not like that's a travel day. They're home.
Yep.
I'll play on Monday.
And they're not, they don't have any reason to like give updates on Monday either. Like usually you get the pregame media stuff with the manager where they talk about the injuries in the lineup, but you're not going to have that. I think the way to do it is you gotta hope you have someone. I think I said earlier 18 teams play 7, so you're going to have a few teams that are off on Monday, but not many. I'm looking at the schedule here. It looks like the Dodgers might be Dodgers and Colorado might be the only teams off Monday, so that doesn't work very well.
No, it doesn't. It's super frustrating.
We have 14 games on Monday, so unless you have a Rockies outfielder that you can kind of hold out or a different Dodgers outfielder, you have to make a decision before you know the Dodgers lineup on Tuesday.
Or any other West Coast team.
Yeah. Then you can wait that night, but the Dodgers don't play until Tuesday. That still makes it tough.
Yeah, exactly. You're kind of hoping for, I guess San Francisco's at home, Arizona's at home.
But you're still a day ahead with those.
There's not too many. Yeah, you're exactly. But, I mean, at least you can wait, to the latest possible on Monday.
I guess that's true, yeah.
Cincinnati at San Francisco. There's not too many West Coast teams at home either.
And I just don't think we're going to get any Dodgers news, really, tomorrow. Unless they, put him on the IL or something. I think we're going to get an update on him for Tuesday.
Right. Well, and that's just the thing, too. I mean, with lack of access these days, with so many things Zoom-oriented.
Yep.
Yeah, there's no reason for them to make him available. So, yeah, it's kind of tough.
Sonny Gray on your Reds is expected to pitch this week. He's going to face the Cleveland. He's going to face Cleveland on Friday is kind of the hope. Jeff, if you have Sonny Gray in a 12 or 15 team, are you starting him this week out the bat?
Push play for Sonny Gray.
Me too.
Start him.
Me too. George Springer, speaking of all-star outfielders, we're talking about Betts. Sounds like he has a full recovery from his oblique, which is a good thing, and he's day-to-day really with the right quad strain. I kind of sneakily think the right quad strain might have been the best thing to happen to him, gives him a couple extra days from the oblique, because the oblique's always the one you worry about coming back a little bit too soon from. So I think once he comes back from this one, we'll be good to go. I think he's probably going to be back this week, though.
Except the other thing you always worry about coming back from too soon is a quad strain or a calf strain.
Yeah, Hammy's up there, too.
We just talked about Josh Donaldson, for crying out loud. I mean,
at least Springer doesn't. You're not really there for the stolen bases. You're more there for the power. But, yeah, he's running around. He's scoring on doubles and all that. But, I don't know. I just – obliques scare the hell out of me. So I kind of hope maybe the extra days will help that. But you mentioned Robbie Ray. We talked about the Jays. He's starting on Monday. Archie Bradley went on the IL with an oblique strain. He wasn't really saving games anyway. I assumed he was be dropped anyway, but he can be fully dropped. We already talked about Jesse Winker. Miguel Cabrera, 10-day IL with a bicep strain. No timetable in this one. They signed Renato Nunez is playing first base for them now. I don't know. There's some people that liked Miggy as kind of a sneaky late corner, but I kind of just think he's a drop right now.
I mean, he was already – that's where he's being drafted is kind of a streamer, right?
Yeah, I think so. And if you have a streamer that gets hurt, it's the same as the next guy too. Tyler O'Neill's the same way. I liked him as a late-round pick, but I'm not holding on to someone that I drafted that late that is kind of, like you said, kind of a streamer.
Yeah, it's big for Nunez. It was this kind of a surprise he didn't make the team out of spring training.
Yep.
He was at the alternate training camp site. I think he struck out two or three times today. You look at Cleveland, actually. That's one thing. Their staff. There's a lot of guys that can strike you out.
And they just figure out ways to make guys good, too. I mean, Logan Allen's interesting. Logan Allen almost got out of that game in the first inning. He gave up a run, loaded the bases. And then Jonathan Scope, Allen was all the place. Allen went 1-0, and then Scope swung at a bad slider, like way out of the zone. It totally changed the at bat. And then he struck out later in that bat on a bad pitch, like a hanging slider. Scope saved that game for Allen. He was kind of on the ropes, and he settled in nicely and pitched five innings. But that was, it's funny in baseball how you can get that one inning. And if you don't get out of there, it's a blow up line, but he got out of there and he settled in pretty well.
Yeah. And it's rare. Some pitchers actually bounce back from a bad inning. Who did I see that did that today? Yesterday it was Eflin. Gave up three in the first against the Braves, only gave up one the rest of the way. And, you know, it wasn't a good outing, but it could have been a disaster, and it wasn't. And in the past for Zach Eflin, that used to be a disaster. I having had him on many previous teams, he's a better pitcher now.
The ability to bounce back and kind of wipe that inning off and get going is a skill with pitchers. There's some guys that do it really. You see with, like, even guys like Scherzer will give up two of the runs and then just lock in and they go 5-6 shutout. And you see the guys lock in like that. And you see other pitchers that we, like you said, we start and we've pitched and dealt with it. That just once they get that, they just kind of fall apart.
Yep, that's right.
We mentioned Tyler O'Neill. I think he's a drop also. He's on the 10-day aisle with right groin tightness. So I think that you can move on and grab another outfielder you can use in the next couple weeks.
Maybe, but I will say this. I want to hold on to him. His power speed upside intrigues me still.
I do. I was all over him in drafts. I think I kept him in a 15-teamer. I dropped him in both my 12-teamers. I
think that's the line. Yeah. I think that's the line for sure. And then, you know, yeah, and the thing is, you look at the Cardinals, they don't really have a whole lot that's better.
They cannot get an outfielder that's good. It's wild. All these guys, they just haven't been able to find an outfielder in years. Well, they found one. He's playing for the Rays, and he's Randy.
Well, they found two. Dylan Carlson. We're in on Dylan Carlson. I definitely am.
But like, there's just so many of those corner guys they call up, and you know, Arozarena is the one guy, and he's obviously not there anymore. But I don't know. They've had just a cycle of outfielders that they can't seem to hit on a guy that I'm hoping Carlson's the guy. I really like Carlson, and Carlson has a bunch of RBIs and home runs, not hitting for an average quite yet. But I do think we're going to see good things there. But it seems like they just cycled through a lot of corner outfielders and they haven't been able to hit on any.
Yeah. We one other player I wanted to bring up news and notes wise was Padres. Adrian Morejon. Yep. Bad injury today. Forearm strain, it looks like. Not good. And the timing's bad because Denelson Lamet's coming back. It could have been Morejon versus Paddock. Paddock's not looking great so far. 5.63 ERA. He hasn't fixed whatever was ailing him last year. He's, you know, and he gets it's a Pittsburgh start this week. This is kind of like the last chance saloon, maybe. You know, Mackenzie Gore is going to be there at some point. Yep. It's just a question of who he replaces. But
and Ryan Weathers is coming too, right?
Yeah, exactly. They're loaded.
Do you think
that's why they could trade Patino?
You think Lamet starts this week for Morejon?
That's what we got listed in our projected starters. Now, keep in mind, it's against the Dodgers. That's a nice warm
landing spot.
Yeah, I mean that's a tough landing spot there. Big series too. It's Bueller, Kershaw, Bauer for the Dodgers this weekend too against the Padres. That's gonna be fun. I can't wait for that series.
It is gonna be fun. We've got Kershaw, Darvish on Saturday, and Bauer, Snell on Sunday.
Yeah, which Bauer, Snell is like perfect in terms of personality matchup against each other. It is. Too. I make a comparison to Bauer versus the DFS community again, and you know, but Snell is also that guy too.
Yeah,
so,
he is.
Although apparently the way it is on Twitter these days, the season long community is kind of
hasn't been a great start for the season long community this year on Twitter.
No, not so much, but less said the better.
Kershaw looked good today. Kershaw, it's kind of the best he's looked in. I guess it was three starts. And he had a rough spring and kind of a rough start, but he pitched really well against the Nationals today. Granted,
I think he looked pretty good against your A's, except for one inning.
He did, and the A's were really struggling at that point. But yeah, I think this is the best he's looked so far in his three starts.
Yeah, he's getting stronger and stronger. It's almost like we freaked out over one start, a couple of starts too much, or something like that.
Yeah, him versus Scherzer was fun. That's one of those games you don't get lined up very often. It's always fun when they do.
Yep.
All right, well, let's talk about a few players I want to talk about before we get out of here. But first, a note from our sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. Football season approaches. You've got to check out these new best ball leagues on Underdog. Best ball is the ultimate test of your live draft skills since there's no in-season management. That's right. Draft your team and Underdog automatically credits you with the best performing players every week. You don't need to play the waiver wire or worry about trades, just the draft. Who doesn't love drafting? In Underdog Best Ball, you can draft as many times as you want because you don't have to do any roster management, saving you loads of time. Underdog's Best Ball leagues are drafting right now, starting at just $3. Once the season starts, Underdog also has daily fantasy and an all-new pick'em game. Go download the Underdog app now to get in some Best Ball leagues before the season starts. Enter promo code ROTOWIRE with your first deposit. Underdog will honor a money-back guarantee during your first month. Love Underdog? Get your money back with promo code ROTOWIRE. Search Underdog in your app store and use promo code ROTOWIRE. So, Jeff, a few players I wanted to ask you about. Byron Buxton is fascinating. I know you and Chris List talk about him a lot on the SiriusXM show because Chris List has been the Byron Buxton guy for about 15 years. Buxton hit his fifth home run on Sunday. I think it's clear that you and I talked about him in the preseason. We were doing draft podcasts, and we talked about the fact that he hit the ball hard last year. He hit a lot of home runs, didn't steal, but he's at 481. He has one stolen base. He has 7 runs, 9 RBIs, 5 home runs. And the home runs are tanks, too. Like, they're all long home runs. Not like he's hitting cheap home runs right now. He had a 27% barrel rate before today. I don't know if he's going to run at all. I think he'll run a little bit. I think that, you know, the years of 25 stolen base are probably gone. But right. We might look at the years of, like, 30 to 35 home runs with this guy right now.
I might become the Buxton guy if this keeps up. I have him in one league, which is – this is more – that's like a – infinity percent more than I usually have him in. So there is that. But I have him in my old AL only home league, but Amaki league. And I was like, oh, I guess I'll bid the extra dollar on him. Yeah, sure. Or dime, as we go dimes instead of dollars in that. It's a different setup, but I won't bore everyone with the setup. But yeah, I batting cleanup. And looks like that's to stay.
Yeah.
Maybe when Donaldson comes back, we'll see what that does to the lineup. But why mess with a good thing?
And he, like, just looks bigger, looks stronger. Apparently gained a lot of muscle over that. Still plays center field really well. It's not going to slow him down. He had plenty of speed to burn. It's fun right now. I just hope he stays healthy because he's there's probably no center fielder I like watching more chase balls down than Buxton in center field.
Yeah, it's a blast. He went 3-for-4 today. He only one stolen base. Come on, run a little bit more, would you? You know, but dude, you know, stay healthy, please. What a talent.
Yeah, for sure. We talked about JD Martinez a little bit earlier. Apparently, the iPads in the dugout might help him out a little bit. It appears that that 2020 season is looking more ridiculous by the day. Just how much of an outlier it is. He had 3 home runs today. Hit up to 5 on the year. 16 RBI. I wish all my offensive players could just live in Camden Yards for the season.
Yeah, wouldn't it be so bad? It'd be nice, especially facing that Orioles staff. I think you get to go against Jorge Lopez on a regular basis. You know, count me in.
We are worried that Rafael Devers has started a little bit slow, and I think that worry after 3 games in Camden is fully gone now too.
Yeah. By the way, another bullet point for the iPad: Javi Baez has 3 homers now too. And trying to think of normal guys. And of course, Yelich is still striking out 37% of the time.
True.
So,
true.
Yeah. But he is hitting for average.
Yeah. There you go. Ryan McMahon, speaking of 3 home run games, he had a 3 home run game earlier this week. He's hitting 5 home runs, stole a base today, hitting 324. The interesting thing with a man for me is that you look at the strikeout rate. Obviously, it is beyond super early, but he's a guy that strikes out a lot, 34% in 2020. He's at 15.8% right now. Granted, a couple strikeouts here and there, you know, alters that. Something to watch, though. He's maintaining his 2020 hard contact bumps, which is good when he's dropping the strikeouts. He's at 46%, 14% barrel rate, 3 position eligible. This is a guy that if we were to draft right now is probably 6-7 rounds higher than he was just 10 days ago.
Yeah, and he was cheap, and yet weirdly I wasn't that much in on him. I know you were a little bit more than I was. I had him in DFS on the 3 homer night.
Oh, nice.
That was
fun. Did the rest of your team do well enough to make it work?
I think I'm in cash, you know. I broke even. No, I was a little better than break even, but you know, not much.
How many days a week do you play DFS?
Probably 4 to 5. Well, I mean, it's early. Maybe 3 to 5. Okay. I don't know. It's a wide range. I probably, you know, I played a little tiny bit today, but just because I was getting ready for the show, I was like, yeah, let's throw in a lineup here.
Right.
And then I went with Morihan and it gets worse. And Ponce de Leon. Give me Morihan's line for
nothing like an inning and 2/3 and 7 earned out of your 2 pitchers combined. That that plays.
I would have rather had Stroman's line.
Do you find yourself being better at offense or pitching in DFS?
Pitching.
Okay.
Today notwithstanding, right. I've been pretty good on the pitching. I think it's going to get tougher. I think the prices are going to get tighter.
Yeah.
You're not going to get the cheap Kikuchis and Gossmans and things like that that I was getting early on this season. The other thing I'm noticing is, and maybe this it changes when it heats up, but it's easier to stream right now, which means it's easier to find cheap pitching in DFS too, which allows you to get the better bats.
Yeah.
And if you get that right, boom.
It's funny. It's like it's weird. Like football. I mean, I do the football podcast with RotoWire and football. I play DFS every week in football. I just find myself, I care so much about my season long teams of baseball that I don't find myself playing as much. But I like to, as we get in the summer and, you know, maybe you kind of figure out your teams a little bit. There's not quite as much managing that goes on. I'd like to get into it, but I just, I don't know. I find myself flipping on games and like watching my season long games and not wanting more guys to root for, but I need to try and get into it a little bit more.
Yeah, I enjoy it. Yeah, you know, the thing is, summer vacations will kick in, and then we'll start thinking about football in the fall. Yeah. Start doing covering football on air, and then streaming football podcasts, and my time will go away. Yeah. And in which case, I'll probably stop playing as much. But for now, you know, it's great, especially because I put all this prep time in, right?
Right.
And yeah, you don't get every player you want.
No, you don't.
As much as you try, there are targets that I miss in drafts.
For sure.
And
yeah,
even
me too.
Is a vast number of leagues I play in. It's weird, but you satisfy that in DFS really easily. You know, you feel bad about missing on this one breakout guy. Well, you can still use him if you see it, and it's still, you don't think it's being priced accordingly. So go for it.
Speaking of a different kind of leagues, you play in more trade leagues than I do. How quickly, how early in the season you're looking to maybe try and find an early trade high guy or a buy low candidate? Like, at what point of the season are you like, it's time to really look at some rosters and figure out some trades to make? Are you there yet, or you waiting a little bit longer?
You know, I'd be there, except everybody knows buy low, sell high, I feel
like.
Yeah,
that's
true.
But
the thing is, trades still happen in keeper leagues right away.
Right.
That's, I made a trade on the eve of my reserve draft in the XFL, which we did the auction in December, and then we did the draft in late March. And I was like, yeah, I'll trade a prospect there because I'm going to go for it there. So I had a Yu Darvish trade then. It was a big blockbuster deal.
Nice.
And you know, the thing is, like, other things that happened that I needed to do that. Zach Allen got hurt. So it's like, I need another ace.
Yep.
So, and I already made two other similar big deals earlier. So I was like, okay, let's go for it.
Cause I was looking at Aaron Civale, and he has two starts. He's 2-0. He's 14 in .2 innings. So he's like throwing a lot of innings, which is hard to find right now.
Yep.
ERA is really good. The whip is .55, which is absurd. I think he might be a trade high guy. If I was in the league, I think I'd try and max his value out right now. His BABIP is .067, and that's with a 45% hard hit rate and a 9% barrel rate. So it's not like he's avoiding hard contact. He's just giving up a lot of hard contact. He's having to be going at people. I do think he's really good. I like watching him. I like the way he pitch mixes and all that. But K rate's up a little bit, but it's still 25%. You're not talking about a guy who strikes out a ton of guys. He's going to have 5 hits and 3 walks. If I could, take where I drafted Civale, use these two starts, maybe trade up a little bit. I think he's a guy that I would do that on. I think it might be able to work. I think you might find someone who's interested in trading for Civale right now.
Last two those two starts have been against Detroit.
Yep.
He gets to face non-Detroit next, and it happens to be the White Sox in his next two starts.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
He does miss the Yankees, it looks like, he's got one start each in the next 2 weeks. So, yeah, your point holds. That's another reason. But now, the problem with playing the season-long redraft leagues of the trade is it's not like you're just trading for these next 2 weeks. You're trading for the whole season.
Yeah.
There's going to be plenty more games against Detroit and Kansas City. And
I think he's someone you might actually be able to flip for someone you like more and would have drafted a couple rounds higher 10 days ago.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
I'd absolutely agree with that. Yeah, there are certain outlets in our sphere that would argue that that's where he should be. But
yeah, that's probably true too.
Yeah, so we'll see about that.
Brandon Lau is a guy who a lot of people liked is struggling so far. He was 0 for 4 on Sunday, dropped to .179, has no home runs, no stolen bases, only 2 extra base hits. He had a nice strikeout drop in 2020. So this is a number that I want to look at as kind of the season goes along. He was down to 26%. He's back up to 31.5% this year. Again, that's 2 or 3 strikeouts either way could really move that number, but does not have a barrel yet, but he does have a 50% hard hit rate. That's a pretty good sign. His launch angle is a little bit down, but we're 10 games. I think that's going to come around. He's a guy that I'm not worried about yet.
Right. The question might be though, he really struggled in the playoffs too, though.
He did.
Was a book opened up on him.
And is there a point where his playing time's a little bit at risk with Tampa Bay, the way they do stuff too?
It's possible. I mean, it could be like, send the word out. We know how to defeat it.
It's
sort
interesting.
Of thing.
Yeah.
It's possible. I mean, it was on a big stage. Everybody's watching.
That's true.
And everybody can, And it's not like teams that are out of the playoffs stop scouting.
Right.
Now they can dedicate their resources to the few teams that are playing.
Yep.
And try and they really want to beat these teams that have beaten them. You know, it's like, okay, well, let's try to get that, figure that out. And I don't know, but it is also, what, 9 games into the season? Yeah, I mean, yeah. I'm slightly concerned. He is striking out a decent amount still.
And it's so funny because last year peaks a little bit. Like last year, this was 16% of the season, which was like a big, it mattered. And now
it's insane.
We're at, like 6 or 7% of the season. Like, it so doesn't even matter yet. But, you know, it's, you look at everything with a microscope, and everything, it's magnified early in the year. It's just the way it is. But I looked a little bit deeper on Lau. I think I'm going to watch, especially the K rate, but he's hitting the ball hard enough that I think it's coming around pretty quick.
Sure. I can see it.
A guy I wanted to ask you about, Garrett Hampson, kind of got a little bit of helium late in draft season as it looked like he was going to be the starter in center field. He had a 3 stolen base game this week. He's got 4 stolen bases. It's funny because he was someone that I was avoiding in drafts, so I hadn't looked really closely at him. I figured with the stolen bases, he was doing well, but he's hitting .206. The strikeouts are better. He's not striking out a lot, but I don't know. He just is not a guy that I think is a very good hitter, and I just wonder how long he can stick at leadoff hitting .206.
It's always been my argument.
Yeah.
And I was cringing this week because the 3 stolen base game and a bag the next day.
Yep.
You know, I'm just hearing Chris list in my ear like, oh, I told you. And knowing that he probably might be right because he's finally getting regular playing time. You know, and that's always been one of the big bugaboos about him is you never know when he's going to be able to play.
Yep.
He's also hitting 154 at home. I take that back. He wasn't hitting 154. He had an OPS of 154 on the road. that's right. OPS. He's hitting .0 on the road. He went 0-for-4 again today, but he does have those bags, and those bags play.
They do. His WRC plus is 53 right now. Like I don't know how long he can. I know it's the Rockies, and they do stuff that makes no sense all the time. But how long can you have this guy really lead off? Like, I get he's fast. I get he can steal bases. The guy had a .287 OBP last year. Like, you can't just leave him at the one spot all year, right?
I don't think you can, but Rockies are going to Rocky.
That's the one point.
Brendan Rodgers is making some significant progress in his recovery. It was a pretty bad hamstring strain.
It was.
It was not just a tweak or anything like that. It was a really not just. And I know every strain is a tear, but it was a pretty big tear from what I could tell. Judging by the reporting on that,
Raimel Tapia is a better leadoff hitter right now for them, and they don't use him there.
They used to.
And I think they're going to have to at some point because I just don't think Hampson plays up there.
Man, but anytime the Rockies are on the road, it's Stream City, though. I mean,
I'm looking at Tapia. I guess he hasn't really he got on base last year, but the year before he didn't walk very much. He's a .309 OP, so maybe he's not the best example either. They don't. I guess the point is the Rockies, like, that lineup suddenly is not nearly as fun as it's always been. You know, when you get Arenado out of the middle of it, do you have Crone in the middle? They don't really have a guy that I guess is kind of pushing Hampson either.
Unless it's Sam Hilliard.
Who doesn't play anyway.
Right. I mean, well, it's Rocky's going to see also Rocky's going to Rocky.
Sure.
Although he's hitting .176 in his own right, too. Yeah. So, as much as we want to call Rocky's prospect hounds assemble, I mean,
and
they're all kind of just
coming off a year where he hit .210 also. I mean, it just.
Yeah.
Would you hold Hilliard right now in a 15 teamer? I'm assuming in a 12, you think he's a drop.
I would almost do home and away splits with him. Drop, whenever they've got like even half a series at home, I pick them up.
Yeah.
We'd look to see if they're not facing a bunch of lefties, but if they're facing at least 2 righties and you can have them for a half a week. Sure.
Yeah, he's hard. He's hard to hold on to right now. Just he's not getting enough at bats. Just not playing enough.
Right, and the whole team is down. I mean, Crone's not hitting at all.
Yeah,
that's been bad. You know, quietly, their best hitter might be Dom Nunez.
Yeah, he's got 3 home runs and has kind of taken taken the bulk of the playing time away from Elias Diaz.
And I'm lying about him being a best hitter. I'm just being silly, but
he does. Three home runs though. Yeah, it's. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how much you're lying. Oh, I guess his OBP. He has 0 walks and it's 6 strikeouts.
It's everybody on this team. It's then you're like, oh, who could bat lead off for this team? Just let Story bat 9 times. He'll be fine.
That would work.
You get Blackman in every once in a while. Of course, McMahon.
Okay, but you don't want him leading off.
And these ghost runners.
Yeah, you don't want him leading. It's just I know we always talk about the Rocky shuffle and get all your Rockies in at home. It's just there aren't that many that are playable right now.
Yeah, it's just like trying to play the, you know, a team full of Brent Maynes and just trying to turn them into real hitters.
It goes without saying that when you get the Rockies on the road, that's a team I would stream against pretty regularly.
Yeah, I mean, exactly right. And, you know, Johnny Cueto looked like vintage Johnny Cueto on Friday.
He did.
Although he looked more like Louis Tiant with the 17 different pauses.
He's really playing the shimmy in there this year.
Yeah, he is. But it worked, at least this particular
game. It was weird. I'm such a baseball fan that I was kind of hoping to get the complete game, even though I wanted Jake McGee to come in and get the save. I was kind of rooting for the complete games because we get so few of them, and I do like Cueto a lot. I was kind of hoping he was going to finish that game off because they had a crowd there for the first time, and people were going nuts.
Right.
And I tell you what, it's funny. We were so happy to have baseball last year. It's amazing to me how much difference even having a 20% crowd there is for watching games. It just makes
it makes
a big difference.
And
I was so happy to have it last year that I didn't really care that we didn't have the crowd, but it makes a difference.
It does. And you can make it because, like, the Nats played one game in their doubleheader, the opening of that doubleheader where they put in the piped in fake noise, and it was just miserable again. You're like, oh, get rid of this stuff. Yeah. Oh,
it's funny. The Dodgers made it like three innings with their cashless mobile ordering food before they opened the concession because it was such a disaster. So good work, Dodgers.
Oh, really? I didn't hear about that.
The fourth inning, they tweeted out that they're opening up concessions to regular walk-up because they just butchered the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, I got to imagine logistics of that could be really difficult.
But you figure at 20% capacity, you would be able to figure it out. But apparently, like, the parking lot, like, getting in the parking lot was a disaster, which seems impossible when you
always a disaster.
I know, but it's 20%. Like, you go from 50,000 to 10,000. You think that would be, like, figured out just kind of organically, right?
You know, 10,000 people at one given time,
I guess,
still was a big surge of people.
And three gates only. I guess that it kind of works. But
did they only open three gates? Yeah.
Probably.
That'll do it.
There's one, two. I think there's only three entrances, right?
Yeah, you might be right. I don't know it like the back of my hand. But, yeah, I just know it's really hard to get in and out of.
Yeah.
And you never go to a game on Friday night unless you're either willing to leave early or wait forever.
Yeah. It's just, I thought it was funny that even with the 20% capacity, they still managed to butcher everything. So,
yeah.
Anybody else you want to talk about? We're 10 games in here. There were just some guys that I wanted to highlight, but to anybody that is piquing your interest at the moment that you want to discuss?
No, just I threw up a new article up on the site tonight.
Nice.
Talking about, in-game box scores on Savant are so amazing. And I never realized it. Like, someone asked me a question on Twitter about Luis Castillo's velocity. I was like, okay, I'll go to his player page and try to find that. And wait, just go to – and someone's like, no, go to the box score, dummy.
Yeah.
It's a whole new world. I was so happy.
It's very cool. There's so much stuff in there, and I don't even know half of it, too. There's just so much stuff.
It's overwhelming, and I can't believe I didn't know this before. I'm supposed to be someone that knows something about this industry, blah, blah, blah. But check it out. Check out the box scores on Savant. Savant is amazing. The people at MLB – I mean, for all the crap MLB gets as an organization, MLB.com and, like, the other properties like Corey Schwartz, Darren Willman, all of them, they do great work.
Yeah.
And it's just a hearty appreciation and thank you for what they do.
And, like, in the last 5 years, it's just blown up how much more is out there. Like, it's incredible. I mean, you go on Savant, you can, like, watch any home run at any point. Just pick a guy and you can watch those home runs. The amount of video clips that you can just get on the
film room.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Within free use from their film room.
You just have to say it's from them.
5 seconds, you can pretty much watch. It's insane how fast. It's just crazy.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's really amazing. We live in a heck of a time.
It's funny because every once in a while I like think of something from the 80s and try and go find a clip of a specific, and it's impossible to do because it's just not on there. And now it's just automatic, and we take it for granted but fully appreciate it because there's a lot of cool stuff, and it makes a lot of fun.
It does.
So cool. Well, thanks everybody for listening to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast, the Sunday night / Monday morning version. We'll be back at you next week as always. If you want to follow Jeff on Twitter, he's at Jeff_Erickson. I am at Scott Jenstead. If you can please rate and review the podcast, we greatly appreciate that. Other than that, hope you guys have a good week of baseball, and we'll be back at you next week. Take care. We know Haley, Haley, Eddie, Elvis, and Gene.